यमुना तीरावन चारे। जय राधा माधव, जय तुंज बिहारे। हम अष्टोत्तर स्तर श्री श्रीमद डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी शील प्रभुपाद की जय। ओम विष्णुपाद पर हम सब परिवराजाचार्य अष्टोत्तर स्तर श्री श्रीमद डिवाइन ग्रेस शील भक्ति सिद्धांत सरस्वती ठाकुर प्रभुपाद की ग्रंथराज श्रीमद भागवतम की गौर प्रेमानंदी। ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द लोटस फीट ऑफ श्री गुरु एंड श्री गौरांग। नारायण नमस्कृत्यं नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत्। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Reading chapter 18 of the 10th canto, continuing with the description of Krishna's playful activities with his coward boyfriend. It's really quite cool to be in this chapter of the Bhagavatam, isn't it? I mean, this section of the Bhagavatam, isn't it, Josh, to be giving classes on these passages? It's really like special. It's not, you know, it's like, because, you know, we go through it sequentially, and so the fact that we're here now at this time is really like pretty cool. Okay, so 24 is on the board. I'll read 23 on my own, and then we'll chant 24 together. Rama Sanghatino Yarhi Sridama Vrishabhadayah Kridayam Jainastam Stan Uhu Krishna Dayo Nipa. My dear King Parikshit, when Sri Dama, Vrishabha, and other members of Lord Balaram's party were victorious in these games, Krishna and his followers had to carry them. So that was the wager, that the losing party has to carry the winning party. Uvaha Krishna Bhagavan Sri Damanam Parajitaha Vrishabham Bhadrasenastu Pralambo Rohini Sutam Uvaha Krishna Bhagavan Shridamanam Parajitaha Vrishabham Bhadrasenastu Pralambo Rohini Sutam. Vaishnavas, Uvaha Krishna Bhagavan Shridamanam Parajitaha Vrishabham Bhadrasenastu Pralambo Rohini Sutam Uvaha Krishna Bhagavan Shridamanam Parajitaha Vrishabham Bhadrasenastu Pralambo Rohini Sutam. Anybody else? Go for it. Shridamanam Parajitaha Vrishabham Bhadrasenastu Pralambo Rohini Sutam. Mataji, try to kariye. Uvaha carried Krishna, Lord Sri Krishna, Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sridhamanam, his devotee and friend Sridhama, Parajitaha, being defeated, Vrishabham, Vrishabha, Bhadrasenaha, Bhadrasena, to and Pralambaha, Pralamba, Rohini Sutam, the son of Rohini, Balaram. Translation and performed by the servants of his divine grace, Ki Jai. Defeated the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna, carried Sri Dama. Bhadrasena carried Vrishabha, and Pralamba carried Balaram, the son of Rohini. Purport. One may ask how Bhagavan, the Supreme Lord, can be defeated by his boyfriends. The answer is that in his form, God has a father may sometimes play. Thus, Sri Dama agreed to ride on Lord Krishna's shoulders to please his beloved friend, who happened to be Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Om Agyanante Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Namo Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gaura Tvishe Namaha E Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Manchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, good morning everyone to the Srimad Bhagavatam class. So, in psychology, there are many tools that are developed to impart lessons. They're called pedagogical tools. And these tools have been researched over many, many decades on what does it actually take, what kind of teaching mechanisms can be utilized to implant lessons in the minds of young students and children. And there's one such pedagogical tool that's being utilized in this section of the Bhagavatam that's very important. And it's worth pointing out because, you see, the Bhagavatam is the product of Krishna's intelligence, right? It's the activities of God. God has a message that he wants to convey to us, and he wants to make sure that we get it. So if the most intelligent human being in existence, right, has a... God is not a human being, sorry, but the most intelligent brain, the source of all intelligence, has a message he wants to convey to us, then naturally, whatever method he uses is worth understanding, because that's the best medium for conveying this information, right? Make sense? And that's what we see here in the Bhagavatam, because the tool that Krishna is employing is the tool of pastimes or lila. And within the tool of that pastime or that story, there is imbued a very, very deep message. And the very deep message that's imbued in this particular verse and purport is explained in the purport it is written here, it says, the answer is that in his most in his original form, God has a most playful nature and occasionally enjoys submitting to the strength or desire of his loving friends. So, one of the most esoteric truths of the Vedas is that reality is ultimately personal, and that personal source, right? So, but even more confidential than knowing that reality has a source is to know that source is completely personal. And even more esoteric than that is to know that personal source wants to have a personal relationship. He's rasa, raso vaisa. He wants to have loving exchanges with his parts and parcels who are actually meant for his pleasure, right? Krishna expands to expand his enjoyment in the form of the living entities. And that's why in the Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna says, what is that famous verse? By all the Vedas, I am to be known. I don't remember the Sanskrit because I'm not good at these things. But by all the Vedas, I am to be known. So is it just a matter of just information, just knowing that Krishna exists, knowing that he's, you know, the cowherd boy of Vrindavan who plays a flute? It's not just a matter of knowing that aspect of him. It's a matter of knowing what Krishna also wants. And what Krishna ultimately wants is loving relationship. He wants interactions with us where, out of love, we submit ourselves to Krishna and Krishna submits himself to us. This is the most esoteric truth of the Vedas. And to help us understand this point, to help us in a deep way, in a subconscious way, really grasp it, we have the Leelas of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And what makes the Leela of the Srimad Bhagavatam so fascinating is that the Bhagavatam, it is, in one sense you could say the whole of Bhagavatam is Leela, you know. But at the same time, the Bhagavatam does contain a lot of Sambandha Gyan, knowledge of reality. And it is explained by Acharyas that the ability to appreciate the pastimes of Krishna depends on the maturity of Sambandha Gyan. That Sambandha Gyan has to mature within us for us to be able to really appreciate the Leela. I'll give you an example. First of all, what is a Sambandha Gyan? It's basic. I'm the eternal soul. Krishna is my master. We have a relationship of love and service, and I should offer myself to him in loving service. That's the core principles of Sambandha Gyan, right? Why is this so important? It's kind of like seeing someone who's really good at something do something that we have no experience of, right? Like say, for example, you go to see a Bharatanatyam dance performance. Okay, so for most of us, it's quite boring, isn't it? Who here thinks Bharatanatyam is boring? I think it's quite boring. But if you spend 10, 15, 20 years studying Bharatanatyam dance performance, and you understood how every single dance was actually a pastime from the Puranas, because literally that's what Bharatanatyam is. It's basically pastimes depicted through dance. You know, the facial expressions, the gestures, it's, you know, they do like Odissi, Bharatanatyam, all of these, all of these dances are actually pastimes depicted through dance. So when they're making these facial gestures of looking angry and sad and looking excited and strong, or you could say bravado, and they're about to fight, these are all scenes from the pastime. So somebody who's been trained, right? Somebody who's been trained to pick up on these subtleties, or who knows what these subtleties look like, when he or she watches a Bharatanatyam performance, they're feeling great ecstasy because they can actually appreciate what's happening, right? You and I may not be able to appreciate. It's the same thing with cooking. Josh knows. When a cook uses a subtle kind of spice combination and another cook tastes it, whoa, you know, whoa. Like, did you just do that? Did you just add lemon juice with a little bit of this and that? Like, that was genius, you know? A cook can appreciate such a thing. Because why? Because the cook has expertise, some experience with this field. So then when he sees something really perfect in action, there is an appreciation. Whereas for the rest of us, we're just so hungry, our palate is not so developed, right? So we just scarf down the food. We're like, tastes good. Like, how was it? Tastes good. That's all we can say. We can't say anything beyond that. We can't say anything about the heat, the spice level, the combinations, the texture, the fragrance, the look of the preparation. Nothing. It just tastes good. So on someone like that, you know, the finesse of the cooking is kind of wasted. It's kind of wasted. The beauty of a Bharatanatyam dance is kind of wasted. A musical composition is kind of wasted because a person like that doesn't have the expertise to really appreciate what is actually going on here. And in the same way, if one does not understand Sambandha Gyan, has not matured some level of Sambandha Gyan, the pastimes of Krishna, hearing those pastimes, is more or less like good karmic pious activity. It creates some purification, but the core principle, the core point of surrender to Krishna will not enter into our hearts because the Sambandha Gyan hasn't really, our heart hasn't really marinated in Sambandha Gyan. Now, at the beginning of the Bhagavatam explains itself that this book is meant for two kinds of people, those who are Rasikas and those who are Bhavakas. This is the third verse of the first canto. And Rasika and Bhavaka refers to two kinds of people. The Rasika is somebody who has knowledge of what the Rasa Tattva is, right? What are the different elements of Rasa Tattva? What is Thai Bhav? What is Anubhav? What is Vibhav? He or she has understood the different elements of Rasa Tattva. Such a person can appreciate. This is what the Bhagavatam is talking about. The Bhavaka is somebody who has Rati. He or she has Bhav. Very advanced devotee. Someone who has some awareness of their eternal relationship with Krishna. So when they perceive others relating to Krishna, they can really dive into the nectar of the Bhagavatam and really appreciate it. So for us, it begins with becoming Rasikas. We have to at least have some good conceptual foundational understanding of what Rasa Tattva is. And to be able to distinguish between Rasa and what is the opposite of Rasa? Mundane Rasa. You could say like transcendental Rasa and mundane Rasa. Just like in the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, those who are wise, they know the difference between work that is done, you know, for fruit of gain versus work that is done in devotional service. Right? You remember this verse from the third chapter of Gita? Krishna says, they know the difference between work that is fruit of activity versus work that is done in devotional service. So in the same way, it is incumbent upon us to study the nectar of devotion and Rasa Tattva, to at least know what is Rasa Tattva all about. And I'm not going to go into a discussion of what Rasa Tattva is, but in essence, there's a few key elements of Rasa Tattva. There's something called one's sthayi bhav, or one's fixed relationship with Krishna. And in that fixed relationship, so for example, in this case here, the sthayi bhav is Sakya Ras. So the fixed relationship of Sri Dama and other cowherd boys with Krishna is Sakya Ras, or the fraternal Rasa. And in that fraternal Rasa, there is an object of love, which is Krishna. I don't know why someone's calling me this early in the morning. But in that object of love, there is the object of love, which is Krishna, in his youthful form, in his young, playful cowherd boy form. Okay, for Mother Yashoda, the object of love is Krishna also, but particularly in his, she always sees him as a young little child. She always sees him as a young little child, and the gopis always see Krishna as a youthful lover. But for the cowherd boys, it's that middle age that's really the object of their love and attention, that playful form of Krishna when he's just beginning to herd the cows. You know, after he's started herding the calves, then he gets to herd the bigger cows, and they go out into the forest and have pastimes. So that personality is the object of their love, and they are the shelter of that Sakyaras. They're carrying that fraternal love towards Krishna. And in that love, there is many expressions of love. Just like, for example, amongst friends, one expression of love is joking. We make fun of each other, isn't it? Just now, you two were wrestling over the sitting mat. Would you do that with Deepan? Probably not. You just met him. The Sakya Ras hasn't fully matured yet. You know, so you wouldn't do that with him because why? That sthayi bhav, that relationship isn't fixed, right? It's just acquaintance. Hello, welcome to the temple. Nice to meet you. But with Josh, the relationship is fixed, right? So you can feel free to engage in such pastimes like fighting over a sitting cushion in a temple room. Why? Because that fraternal, this is an expression of fraternal Ras. You know, I steal your things, I fight with you, I eat off your plate. You know, you see some nice laddu on your friends, but you just eat it off their plate. It's a friend, you can do that. You wouldn't do it with your guru. You wouldn't go up to your guru's plate and eat a laddu off his plate. You wouldn't happen like that. So, but it happens in friendship Ras. These are the expressions of friendship Ras. There's two kinds of expressions. Those who are intentional, like hugging, jumping, playing, and those that are unconscious, that just come up as a result of some pastime. So the expression of love that is unconscious and the expression of love that is conscious. Like that, these are the different elements of Rasa Tattva. It's all very well explained in Nectar of Devotion. But those who want to become Rasikas then understand these things. Then when they read these pastimes, they're able to perceive these different subtleties in motion. And I'm just giving a very, very topical overview because there's so much detail. There's different kinds of Sakya Ras, there's different kinds of Madhurya Ras, and there's different kinds of, within the Madhurya Rasa, there's different kinds of gopis. You know, they have different kinds of ways of expressing love to Krishna. So those who are expert, they study these things and they can see, oh, this is this kind of gopi expressing anger in this kind of mood, and it creates this kind of happiness in Krishna. And what is the purpose of all this complexity? The purpose of all this complexity, again, ultimately is to give pleasure to Krishna. That's why all of this exists. All of this rasa tattva exists to give pleasure to Krishna. Why? Because love is in the details. Love is in the details. So even in the spiritual world, there's so many details to the relationships because it adds more and more flavor to the relationship. You know? It's like this, right? It's like this. You know, there is a kind of social construct in Vrindavan. There is a sort of varnashram dharma. The gopis have husbands. And because they have husbands, them leaving in the middle of the night to come and see Krishna in the forest, there is a certain rasa to that. There's a certain taste to that. Because why? They have to break some rules. Even though they're eternally liberated, it's the spiritual world, they can do whatever they want. But there's rules even in the spiritual world. And when they're broken, it creates a certain kind of rasa for Krishna and the gopis to enjoy. There's a fear, what if we get caught? What if our husbands show up? What if our families reject us? But when Krishna plays his flute, that's not even a consideration. It's not even a consideration. They run off to the forest. So if that construct didn't exist, if those rules didn't exist, then you wouldn't experience those particular moods in a relationship. Right? Like nowadays in the modern scenario, in relationships, there are hardly any rules. People just do whatever, whenever, however. Right? There's no sense of like tradition or ritual or practice or rules. And it doesn't actually allow you to taste rasa in relationships when there's no rules. Right? Because just like in friendship, right? The one rule of friendship is don't hurt your friend. You know what I'm saying? And when that rule is in a subtle way followed, and then there's all kinds of playing, joking, and laughter, there's a lot of joy in the relationship. You know what I'm saying? But in the modern, it's like, no, just do what you can do whatever you want, however you like. So even if you okay, because it makes you happy. If you're happy, it's fine. It's a relationship. Just like right now, there is a rule. If you wrestle and you lose, then you have to carry the winning party on your back. That's a rule that all the cowboys agree to follow. And Krishna also follows, except in one pastime, which I didn't think about narrating this pastime, but now it's coming to my mind, so maybe I'll narrate it. But anyways, the point is, because that rule exists, then the pastime can be facilitated, and the rasa of friendship can be experienced and tasted amongst the cowherd boys. Now, again, the point is that all of this is being happened, and all of this is taking place to facilitate the pleasure of Krishna. And the key point here is that bhakti, which is an energy that comes from the heart of Srimati Radharani, is actually meant for the pleasure of Krishna. That's what bhakti is actually meant for, right? Just like a mridanga, it's meant to be used as an instrument. We can misuse it by using it to keep our water bottle or like, you know, to put our head on as a pillow, you know, or as a weapon. We can misuse the object and it might even serve that purpose. But in its original creation, the mridanga is a musical instrument. And in its original existence, bhakti is that which comes from the heart of Srimati Radharani in a ninefold expression: hearing, chanting, worshipping, praying, surrendering. And all of these are meant for the pleasure of Krishna. When we as conditioned souls add our own alternative or ulterior intentions and desires to the process of bhakti, that's what becomes mixed devotional service. So it's us misusing bhakti. There's nothing wrong with bhakti. Bhakti is perfectly fine. It's us who misuse it because we engage in bhakti with ulterior motives, right? So if one does a devotional service out of duty, out of wanting to become recognized, out of fear, if I don't come to Mangal Arati, then other brahmacharis will say, Prabhuji, were you sleeping? Why didn't you come to Mangal Arati? So, you know, if or just whatever reason, we want to be seen as a good devotee in the eyes of others. You know, we want others to think, wow, you're a very serious Vaishnav. Look at how much service you did. Look at how beautifully you addressed the deities. Amazing. So we're doing our bhakti to acquire recognition, things like that. So what does that mean? That means we're misusing bhakti. We are missing the original intent of the activity, which it was meant to give pleasure to Krishna, right? And pure devotional service is simply us aligning with the purpose of what devotional service really is. That's all it is. It's us recognizing that bhakti is an energy that comes from the spiritual world, is meant for the pleasure of Krishna, and that's what the parampara is showing, right? It's what the acharya is demonstrating, and we align with that. That's all pure devotional service is, recognizing the true purpose, the true intent of what devotional service is meant for, and recognizing that, okay, well, I may have been doing it for all these other reasons, but, you know, this is why I'm really supposed to engage in bhakti, because it's meant to give pleasure to Krishna. So I thought that since this purport mentions a little bit about how God has a most playful nature, I would read just a few small things, you know, just to help us get a little insight into the kind of playful nature of Krishna's Vrindavan Leela and also Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Gaur Leela in Navadvip. So I'll read first a little description of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's childhood activities in Navadvip, and it's very nice. It's from the second chapter of Chaitanya Bhagavat, and there, yeah, it's just being described what are the, some of the things that you know Nimai Pandit would do as a little boy. He was extremely mischievous. So let's just read a few verses here. In spite of Nimai's mischief, oh wait, no, sorry, I just picked up at the wrong point. Scroll up. I thought I had it. The Brahmana said, "Dear friend Jagannath Mishra, please hear about your son's misdeeds. Due to his misdeeds, we are unable to bathe properly. Someone said he splashes water on me and disturbs my meditation." Another complained, "Your son asked me, quote, 'Who are you meditating on?' In Kali Yuga, I am directly Lord Narayan." Someone said, "He stole my Shivlinga." You know, it's like a little thing that worshippers of Lord Shiva worship Shivalinga. It's like a little stone deity. Imagine you're sitting there, you know, praying to your deity, and you open your eyes and some little boy's grabbed and is running away. That's quite rude. You know, it's like if I'm sitting there chanting japa and Alex comes into my room and takes a picture of my off my altar and runs off, I'm gonna be like, this isn't funny, you know? Like, I'm in the middle of worship. This isn't funny. And someone else said, but the difference is that when Nimai Pandit was doing it, although they were externally getting annoyed, it actually says later on they were completely satisfied. This is the nature of God's beauty. God's beauty is that which, even though it makes you suffer, right, ultimately fills you with happiness and pleasure. In the material world, when we irritate people, when we make them suffer, it doesn't fill them with happiness or pleasure. But Yashoda Dwarpa was explaining so beautifully that the nature of the beauty of God is that even when he makes you cry, you're actually fully satiated. You're fully satisfied, and you like it. You would cry more. Someone else said, "He ran away with my chadar." Someone said, "I kept the ingredients for worshipping Vishnu, flowers, durva grass, sandalwood pulp, on the bank of the Ganga. When I went to take your bath," now listen to this, "your son sat on the asana, ate the bhoga, smeared himself with the sandalwood pulp, decorated himself with the flowers, and ran off." That's really cheeky. That's really cheeky. Then he said, "Why are you unhappy? He for whom you arranged those ingredients has himself enjoyed them." Right? You came to worship the Lord with all these ingredients. I've enjoyed them. Why are you unhappy? This is what you wanted, right? Someone said, "I was standing in the water chanting my Gayatri, and he grabbed my feet and pulled me down." That's also really irritating. Another said, "He always takes my flower basket and fresh cloth." Someone else said, "He stole my Bhagavad Gita." Then someone else explained, "My son is very young, and your son makes him cry by putting water in his ears." Even Krishna, as a little boy, when he would go to the house of the gopis and they wouldn't have good butter for him to steal, he would pinch their babies and make them cry and run away after passing urine and stool on their floors. Another person said, "He comes behind me, climbs on my shoulders, and then jumps in the water, exclaiming, 'I am Lord Mahesh.'" Someone said, "Your son sits on my asana and eats the offerings I prepared for Lord Vishnu. He exchanges the men's clothes with the women's clothes, and then everyone is embarrassed when they go to dress." "O Jagannath Mishra, you are our dear friend. Therefore, we are informing you that your son does such things every day." At the same time, all the neighborhood girls approach Mother Shachi in an angry mood. They all complain to Mother Shachi, "O Thakurani, please listen to what your son has done. He steals our clothes and speaks very badly. If we protest, he throws water on us and starts a quarrel." Right? So even as Krishna, he stole the clothes of the gopis. And then as little Nimai, he he playfully would steal the clothes of the young girls of Navadvi. By force, he scatters whatever fruits and flowers we bring for puja. When we come out for our bath, he throws sand on us. He's surrounded by all sorts of mischievous boys. He sneaks up behind us and shouts in our ears, one of the girls said. He spit water in my face. And then, this one's really mean, he threw okada seeds, quote, which induce itching in my hair. You know, women, Prabhupada says, women love to comb their hair. Women love to comb their hair. So hair is a very important part of a woman's body. They love to comb it and decorate it and braid it. It's just what they do. And so to attack that part of a woman's body is very, very annoying. So that's what he does. He throws okada seeds in her, in their hair, and it's itching now. Someone else said, he said he wants to marry me. Every day he behaves with us like this. Does your Nimai think he's the son of a king? Like this. And actually later on in the pastime, Jagannath Mishra decides that he wants to chastise Nimai Pandit. So he comes to the Ganga in the mood of wanting to chastise his son. And the boys, the word spreads that Jagannath Mishra is coming. So they inform Nimai that your father is coming. He's very angry. So he quickly runs up, runs back home, puts himself in his mother's lap, looks all innocent and cute, you know. And Jagannath Mishra comes to the Ganga. He's like, where is my son? They're like, oh, he didn't come today. He didn't come to take bath. And then when he goes back home, Jagannath Mishra is complaining all these things. And Nimai is like, they're lying. I didn't even go to the Ganga today. So like this, you know, he would also lie very confidently and boldly. He said, I didn't even go. Look at me. I'm so dirty. He smeared some dirt on his face. So it looked like he hadn't taken bath, you know. So he just told his father, look, I didn't even go today. These people are lying. Just like when Krishna ate dirt and Balaram complained. And what did Krishna say? Dauji is a liar. My brother is a liar. Don't believe anything he says. And then there's a little beautiful description of just the playfulness of Krishna. This is a very beautiful scene, actually. I just want to read you all two paragraphs. The scene is like this. It is morning in Nandagram, and Srimati Radharani, who has been given this boon by Durvasa Muni, that whatever she cooks will taste like nectar, and whoever eats what she cooks will live a very long life. So Mother Yashoda, having heard that, had negotiated a deal with Radharani's mother-in-law, Jatila, that please you allow Radha to come and cook for my son, and I will send her home every day with many jewels and gifts. And Chitila is a bit opportunistic, so she thought, not a bad offer. You know, I'll send my daughter-in-law every day to Nandagram, so she can cook for this Krishna, and in return, jewels and wealth will come into our house. Like this. So this deal had been made. And so every morning, every day without fail, it's part of the morning pastimes of Radha and Krishna, that Radharani will come from Yavat with a group of her sakis, a group of her assistants, and she will enter Nandagram and she will cook breakfast for Krishna. And it's a very beautiful description of the preparations she makes and the kind of playfulness that happens with Radha and Krishna as she's cooking, as Krishna is eating. Many pastimes take place. But I just want to read a little description of the beginning, the entrance, as she's entering Nandagram. So here's the little description. It says, as the gopis approach Nandagram, Kundalata tells Sri Radha, the thirst of your chataka eyes will soon be quenched. So a chataka is a... What's a chataka? What's a chataka? It's a bird. It's a bird. And it lives on... You don't say it. What? Rain clouds. So it only drinks water from a rain cloud. Now imagine you have that nice thermos there, Bhakta Adam. If I told you, Bhakta Adam, you can only drink water when it's offered to you. You cannot just go and fill it up from the water fountain. You have to wait till somebody comes up to you and says, Bhakta Adam, did you drink water today? What will happen as a result? All day you'll spend just waiting for someone to come ask you. Isn't it? Because you'll be so thirsty. The thirst will be so unconquerable that you'll spend all day just waiting. Or like if I told Alex, you can only eat when Josh offers you prasad. So all day you'll be sitting there waiting. When will he come? When will he come? It's already 1 p.m. The prasadam line is quickly running. Prasadam is quickly running out. Is running low. When is he going to come? When is he going to come? All you can think about is Josh, right? And when is he going to come give you that permission? So that's the chataka bird is used as an example of eagerness. It is so thirsty. It is just waiting. When will the rain clouds come? When will the rain clouds come? When will the rain clouds come? Why? Because it only drinks rain cloud water. So in the same way, the gopis are comparing the eyes of Srimati Radharani to a chataka bird. Your eyes are like a chataka bird. Why? Because your eyes can only be satisfied when they meet Krishna, when they have darshan of Krishna. So that's a very powerful and beautiful analogy, and it's meant to inspire us that may we someday also become like chatuka birds in our spiritual life, that may not a day go by that we're satisfied with not having darshan of the deities, right? We should feel something huge is missing in our life if we didn't have darshan of the deities today. If we didn't see Krishna on the altar, if we didn't chant his holy names, didn't think of Krishna, didn't do service to Krishna, right? We should have that eagerness. So Kundila just tells Sri Radha, the thirst of your chataka eyes will soon be quenched. At this, Radha trembles, stops dead in her tracks, and then momentarily loses control of herself. But Kundalata revives her ecstatic mistress with these words, now I can see your unmatched chastity. Without even seeing Krishna, indeed, simply by thinking of him, you're overcome by transcendental emotion. So what's happened is, Radharani hasn't seen Krishna yet. Kundalata has just mentioned, it's about to come. You're about to see Krishna. We're about to enter the palace of Nanda Maharaj, right? And just the thought that she'll see Krishna stuns Srimati Radharani. And Kundalata says, I can see your unmatched chastity. Chastity means when you're loyal towards something, right? That's the word chaste means. It means loyalty. So Radharani's chastity is unmatched because she has eyes for nobody else. Nobody else. It's Krishna or no one, right? As they arrive at Nandagram, Radharani, now here's the, I was mentioning to you, we want to hear a little bit about Krishna's playfulness. So here's a description of what Radharani sees. Radharani catches a glimpse of Krishna sitting on a crystal dais in the courtyard just inside the main gate. So here's, you can imagine the gate of Nanda Maharaj's palace, and there's like some beautiful wood stone pavements and courtyards, and there's like a crystal, maybe like a sitting, a seat covered with beautiful crystals, and Krishna is sitting there. He has finished milking the cows and playing with his friends, and has now strategically positioned himself to catch sight of Radha and her entourage, right? So the morning services are over, cows have been milked, wrestling, Krishna wrestles every morning with his friends, wrestling is over, so morning workout over, milking over, and now he's just casually hanging out on this crystal seat, waiting to catch a glimpse of Radha and her entourage. The luster of Krishna's cloth and the hue of his body spread waves of rapture in all directions, and his restless eyes beam rays of splendor wherever he looks. He rests his left arm, like this, on Subal's shoulder, and while with his right hand, he twirls a blue lotus, and with it, Sri Radha's mind. So this is, Krishna is just, he's just chilling. But it's such a beautiful scene, you know, the luster of his cloth, the hue of his body, the way he rests his left hand, and then the way he just twirls a lotus flower, you know, just casually twirling a lotus flower. And with that, he twirls Radha's mind. I don't remember exactly, but I think there's something about this lotus flower. I believe it's a lotus flower that came from Srimati Radharani or not. I'm not sure. Do you remember? There's some commentary about this lotus flower that Krishna always twirls in his hand. Anyways, then I'll just read two more lines of dialogue. Radha asks Lalita, is there no other way to enter the palace? Because she's feeling shy. She doesn't want to walk past Krishna. So she asks Lalita, is there no other way to enter the palace? Lalita nudges Radha forward and replies, Krishna will be waiting for you at every entrance, won't he? Go ahead, don't be afraid. So this is the playful nature of the Braja Leelas. You will not read too much of that. And then the last thing I wanted to mention was, we have plenty of time for discussion, which is good. The last thing I wanted to mention was in this purport, then the commentators mention Sridham. And this is what they say. They say, thus Sridhama agreed to ride on Krishna's shoulders to please his beloved friend. To please his beloved friend. So I thought it might be worth it just to read a little description of who Sridhama is. He's actually Radharani's brother. And this is a verse from Vrajavilas Stava, which is a book by Raghunath Das Goswami, Srila Raghunath Das Goswami, where he's basically in this book, he describes every single prominent associate of Krishna in Vrindavan. His, you know, his uncles, like the brothers of Nanda Maharaj, the mother of Nanda Maharaj, the grandmother of Radharani, the associates of Srimati Radharani, all the prominent sakis, the associates of Krishna, all the prominent cowherd boyfriends, the prominent nurses, the, you know, the mothers, the elderly gopis like Dhanishta, like that. So in this book, Brajvilasava or Srila Raghunathas Goswami is going through all the prominent eternal associates of Krishna in Vrindavan. And this is what he says about Sridhama. He says, Sridhama is the most expert and clever of the cowherd boys, and he is the abode of intense love for Lord Krishna. His complexion is dark, and he is proud that his qualities, age, clothing, and handsome features closely resemble that of Lord Krishna. Right? He looks very much like Lord Krishna. If for a single moment he cannot see Lord Krishna, he trembles with anxiety. I completely take shelter of Sridhar, the constant companion of Lord Krishna. Was it Sridham who's the brother of Radharani, or is it Subal? Sridham, right? Okay, so there's a quick pastime I want to narrate in this regard. Once upon a time, Srimati Radharani was unable to leave her house to have union with Krishna because her mother-in-law had become very suspicious that her daughter-in-law leaves the house every single day to associate with this rascal Krishna. And so Krishna was, of course, feeling a little forlorn and a little sad, and Sridhama happened to be there. And Sridham hatched a plan. He said, I will go to Yavat in the pretense of looking for my pet calf. And when I'm inside the house of Srimati Radharani, I will change clothes with her. She's my sister. We look a little similar. And I will make her look like me. And then she will walk out of the house with the pet calf, covering a certain part of her body so the mother-in-law can't figure out that it's a girl. And then you can have a union with her. And so this is a very sweet pastime. I just summarize it into two sentences, but it takes place where this actually happens. Sridhama goes, and Jatila comes out and says, Sridhama, what are you doing here? And Sridhama is like, I'm looking for my pet calf. Did you see my pet calf anywhere? And Jatila is like, no, I haven't seen. Do you mind if I look around? No, you can look around. Go ahead. You know, and he somehow makes his way into Radharani's inner chambers where she's sitting, feeling very sad and depressed because she wants to go see Krishna, but she can't leave. And as soon as she sees her brother, she's like, what are you doing here? And Sridham tells her, we have a plan. You know, you're going to wear my gopa cloth, and I'm going to wear your gopi cloth, and I'm going to sit here in the room looking like you while you take this pet calf, cover your chest, and I'll dress you up like a gopa, and you go have pastimes with Krishna, and then you can come back, and then we'll change cloth again. So she goes away, and at one point, Jatila checks in. She sees Subal sitting there with, like, you know, maybe like some gopi chadar or something and looking all feminine-like. And she's like, okay, she's still there, you know. And she continues with her household duties. So in this way, there's so much playfulness in Braj. So much playfulness is happening in Braj to facilitate the pleasure of Krishna. So bhakti is meant for the one who learns how to please the Lord. Okay, good. So we have 10 minutes. Does anybody have a reflection? Any reflections?
Hare Krishna. Nice class. I like this point you made in the beginning about expertise and Rasik devotees and the necessity. You drew the parallel with Bharatanatyam and cooking, in somebody needing to be expert to appreciate something that is excellent. And we also have to find devotees who are much more expert than us to learn from. But then at some point in our life, it's also important to find devotees have a similar level of expertise as us so that we can associate with them and deepen our understanding and, you know, in a practical way, go further into our understanding. And this is, it's such a pinnacle in spiritual life, this idea of swajatiya sangha, like-minded sangha. So when you brought that out, I was thinking about that. You brought out the very nice example of cooking, that yes, when you're a cook, actually, one of the most gratifying things is to cook for a cook. Because then you know that everything that I'm doing can actually, this person has the capacity to appreciate it.
Right.
And then that kind of struck a little thought in my mind, is that Krishna is the ultimate expert, actually. He's Rasaraj and he's Rasika Shekara. So he's the most expert of all experts. So anything one does, that propensity to want to cook for somebody who can actually appreciate, or do something for somebody who can actually appreciate what I'm doing, that's finds its fullest expression in doing things for Krishna.
That's a beautiful point. Yeah, because he appreciates even the tiniest bit. Yes. That's a really nice point, because Krishna is that person who can appreciate even the smallest amount of service because he's Rasika Shekhara. Whereas for us, we may not be able to appreciate the details of the small things, you know, but Krishna does. He appreciates the big things and the small things as long as there's some love. It's a nice point. Thank you. It's a really nice reflection. Anybody else? Alex?
Hi, Krishna Prabhu.
Hi,
like you reading the pastimes. It's so sweet. It deepens my faith a little bit. But yeah. I have one question, particularly about Radharani's eyes and the bird analogy. Mm. What are they called? Charita birds?
The Chataka bird.
Chataka bird. Yeah. How Radharani was only satisfied by seeing Krishna. Mm. And I was wondering, how do we develop eyes such as hers?
It's a question above my pay grade, but I mean, I think the answer always boils down to association, you know, just like, I'll put it like this. Obviously I don't have eyes that only want to see Krishna and only want to see devotees. I don't have those eyes yet, but at least we have come so far as to only want to engage in Krishna consciousness, right? At least we have this much. We've come this far that we've accepted Krishna as our Lord, and we've accepted bhakti as our process, you know, and so we don't have desires for anything else, right? It's not like you're going to become hopefully none of us here are going to become like Buddha worshippers, or, I mean, we respect, but we're not going to become Shiva worshippers or Buddha worshippers or go back to Christianity. You know what I'm saying? Like, we respect all these traditions, but we have, at least we have fixity in that, right? We have fixity that Krishna is our Lord and bhakti is our process. So how do we get this far? By association, by hearing the Bhagavatam, the philosophy, by associating with those who have that conviction. So I think to Josh's point, if we're very, very fortunate, if we're very, very fortunate, the desire will awaken within our heart to want to have such eyes, that my eyes should only be to see the Lord and His devotees. If we're very fortunate, the desire will come within our heart. And when that desire comes in your heart, that is the greatest moment in the existence of our existence, you know? And when Krishna sees that desire in the heart, He will make the arrangements for you to have the association and the experiences that will nurture that desire. See, the whole material world is called karma vinirmatam. It runs on fruitive activity. The material world runs on fruitive activity, which runs on desire, right? So the whole material world runs on desire. Because we have a desire to enjoy separate from Krishna, the material world exists. So it's that which we have to transform. As soon as we have that desire that Krishna, I want eyes like this, that I should have eyes for no one else and nothing else but you and your devotees, you know, then Krishna will guide from within. Where to go, who to associate with, what books to read, what books to not read, what to hear, what not to hear, what to say, what not to say. But the thing is it's our desire that isn't mature yet. You know what I mean? It's our desire that's not mature yet. So, again, and that also happens by association. You know, desire is compared to a crystal that takes the color of whatever you place it next to. So say, for example, you have a crystal, it has no color. Then you bring it next to a black rock. And from that black rock, dark light reflects off dark light. I don't know if such a thing exists. But anyways, purple rock, purple light reflects. Let's go with that. Then that purple light hits the crystal, and the crystal also starts to look purple. That's the idea. The crystal would take on the color of whatever you bring it close to. A red, maybe if it's a piece of ruby, the crystal starts to look reddish. So in the same way, we find devotees who have such a heart, who have such desires, and we bring the crystal of our hearts close to them, and then we associate with them by serving them, by hearing from them, by rubbing, right? Not physically like hugging and all that. That's also nice, but actually rubbing our hearts with their hearts by hearing what they have to say, by associating and serving them. And then we will also get eyes like that. I see it. I see these Prabhupada disciples, you know, these advanced senior devotees, they're just so deeply Krishna conscious that in every situation, in whatever situation they're in, they have eyes for only Krishna's arrangement. They want to see the hand of God in all situations in life. You know, they actually have that as our process. We may not be so good at doing it, but at least I don't think any of us are going to, I mean, I hope not. No, we're not going to go back to becoming Muslims or something like that. Like, you know, like, it's cool. We appreciate and respect, but, you know, like that. So I would say that's how it is. By association, we gain that desire. But it's the desire that we have to pray for. One time my Guru Maharaj said, he said, you can also desire to have that desire, that Krishna, may someday the desire sprout in my heart to want only you. So in all honesty, I don't have that desire yet to want only Krishna, but I can have the desire to have that desire. You know, so at least I can pray for that. So 2 minutes, one last reflection. Anyone? Oh, Subal Prabhu.
Thanks, Harishan Prabhu. I was just thinking when you were giving the example of part of the persons of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Krishna, in which in that relationship with the spiritual world, social conventions and expectations and even transgressions, you know, quite a bit of a transgression of you know, social
Dharma,
order,
yeah.
is facilitated or even encouraged or, you know, forced by, you know, Krishna. Is demanding that,
yeah,
in one sense. Without understanding the principle, that the actual principle, as you mentioned, is, you know, Krishna's pleasure, and to facilitate that, and that's the actual ultimate moral position, is the highest, you know, the param dharma. So one can miss that, you know, in terms of okay, you know, for the pleasure of Krishna, you can break social conventions, you know, like that. So it comes to mind the sometimes this phrase used to be that in the old times, you know, by hook or by crook, you know, you actually, for the purpose of expanding Krishna consciousness, you can cheat people, trick people, or break conventions like that. I was thinking also, Saturday we went on Harinam, and you know, on Harinam sometimes you do, you know, scan how you can squeeze yourself. Sometimes legally you're not able to stand here, you're not able to do that, you know, according to the conventions of the city, but devotees just, you know, just do it.
Do it anyway.
You know, for example, you don't supposed to disturb people in the train, you
right.
know, with your
music.
Personal music or your things like that.
Yeah.
But we do it anyway. And you know, you have to be tuned in where the limit is, you know?
Right.
But nevertheless, you break conventions, but at the same time, you have to be, you know, very tuned in. So I just wanted, you know, what are your thoughts on that part of, you know, developing that sense of, you know, we still have to be examples, you know, of in society.
Proper behavior, yeah.
Proper behavior, you know, we Prabhupada say, you know, we have to be gentlemen and ladies, you know,
yeah,
in society. And at the same time, you know, there is a sense that for Krishna's pleasure, you know, sometimes even if we have to break conventions, you know, but
yeah.
you know, those are, it could be very confusing, and sometimes, you know, we can abhor people and et cetera, et cetera.
I mean, you know, to be honest with you, me personally, I'm the kind of person who I feel very uncomfortable with the idea of, like, say, doing kirtan on a train, because I just feel like some people are getting disturbed. I'm just very sensitive to things like that. But the pleasure of Krishna is not determined by me. It's determined by those who are closer to Krishna. So Vaisheshika Prabhu, he was here, and he's the one that introduced this. He would, like, you know, we would go out on the train and do kirtan for an MSF. And so ever since then, I was like, well, you know what? He knows what pleases Krishna more than I do. So even though, like, my moral, or you could say my social sense is saying this is annoying people, this is irritating people, I'm just going to trust his judgment. That he must know what's pleasing to Krishna more than me. So because he's doing it and he's introducing this, then I'm going to do it also just because it must be pleasing to Krishna somehow or other. I don't know. So I feel like sometimes our, at least for me, like our conditioning is at odds with what pleases Krishna, you know? And at that point, the only solution for me was to take shelter of what a more advanced devotee has done. Like if you're leading Kirtan on screen, I would go with you because you know what pleases Krishna more than I do. So who am I to say, oh Subha Prabhu, this is culturally inappropriate. You know, I trust your judgment, so I'll just do it. So I think, at least for me, in some areas, I would, you know, finding what pleases Krishna cannot be based on my own whimsical or spontaneous understanding. It has to be based on some senior person's like effort, and I just fall in line with that because maybe it is pleasing to Krishna that we do that, and I'm sure it is because they're hearing the holy name. So even if they are, Prabhupada says, even if they don't like it, at least the holy name has gone in, you know. But you know, just the way I am, I would be like, oh, I feel like in those particular situations you mentioned, I guess one has to have some guidance, right? Like someone more closer to Krishna has to approve or disapprove, you know, that this isn't pleasing to Krishna, but this is pleasing to Krishna, so do this. You know, and Prabhupada even writes in one place in the second chapter that for the pleasure of Krishna, the devotee will normally do what he's unwilling to do, you know? And if something is displeasing to Krishna, he's unwilling to do that even though he would normally do it. So, because I'm not a musician, I'm not a very public kind of person. So for me, singing and dancing in public was always very difficult. But, you know, we do it because it's the Sankirtan mission and pleases the Lord. So I had to break my discomfort with that and just take part. So, but it only happened because I saw those who are... Jai Baldev, you have a comment? Would you like to add a reflection or a comment? No, no, just anything? Oh, it's Chandra Prabhu. Oh, Jai. Pass the mic.
I just remember Srila Prabhupada, the devotees said to him, Prabhupada, they don't like our chanting. Prabhupada said, we don't care what they like, Krishna likes it, and it's purifying.
Yeah, there we go.
The end justifies the means.
There you go.
That's...
All right, we'll end on a sweet note. Thank you so much for that. Srila Prabhupada ki, Granth Rashi Mad Bhagavatam ki, Gaur Premanandi.